Hello and welcome to Funny Mummies, the podcast for people that hate parenting podcasts. I'm Hattie Ashdown, comedian and writer, and I'm blessed with two lively boys. Each show, I'm joined by funny mummies from the world of comedy, but also those that are aunties or friends, because let's be honest, we all need the help of our non-tired mates. Join us as we find the funny side of parenting, life, and being bloody great women.
Happy Mother's Day!
You're listening to Funny Mummies for the Other Woman Show on Soho Radio. Bring it up. Oh, no, we don't want another track. That's real. That's what you'll get with me. This is the me is Hattie Ashdown. You're listening to Funny Mummies. I'm going to bring my mic down. We've got the real sounds. Can you get that, listeners? Yes. No. Good. So, if you've not listened before, you're in for a treat. Every week, it's the Other Woman Show, founded by the wonderful Ruth Barnes. And on my watch, it's the Funny Mummies. So, before I get to my lovely panel today, did I say I'm Hattie Ashdown? Yeah, that's me. So, hello. I hope you're not too tired. And if you are, can I highly recommend a thing called an early night? I can't believe that getting an early night has become my new, it's become my new naughty. It's like, eek, I'm going to bed at 9 p.m. Don't tell anyone, especially the other mums, as I still seem to be rocking up to the school gates with my cardigan inside out, as some mum politely told me. I think your cardigan's on inside out. I'm just tired. The truth is, I'm 4 years into keeping two boys alive. And since I've added a second baby, I'm still figuring it all out and feeling like everyone else has it. But as we know, they're not, are they? They're just muddling along, grasping the knowledge that this is for life. Now, I don't want to scare you, this came to me the other day because I was thinking about my mum saying, like, you never stop worrying about them, whether they're 20, they're 30, they're 40. And, but then it got me thinking about how we are. I'm one of four sisters and we, you know, never stopped looking out for my mum. And I don't just mean health. I mean her emotional needs. You know, we were very instinctive. If she seemed a bit down, we'd take her out or buy her something. And then I was thinking about some of the men in my life and how they are with their mums. And it's not like that. And not to name any names. I know somebody who like completely like missed their mum's 60th. Well, didn't miss it, but didn't do anything special. And like, it really got me thinking, you know, is it nature or nurture? Can we make our sons better? I like this word, caretakers. Okay, I'll get to more of that later. And carry the mental load. So in honour of our guest today, who's written The Other Mother, maybe throwing two mums into the mix can help. So let's welcome, firstly, though, she's flying in from her pit stop ballerina tour. She's your fave regular on the show. No one will get that joke. She's the noughts to my crosses. She's the tonic to my gin. She's the chase to my Dave. She's the mother of one. Clever girl. Resident at Comedy Virgins. It's Gemma, I've sold a bloody house Beagley.
Oh, hello. Oh, yeah, and I did know.
Am I allowed to say that? I suddenly thought I should have got your permission.
Yeah, subject to contracts.
Okay.
Sure.
We'll get more from her later. Next
not,
up.
Not about the house.
Bit no, we won't talk about the house. She's a comedian writer, has been on Live at the Apollo, currently on tour, supporting Ramesh Ranganathan. Have I said that right?
Ranganathan.
Yeah, yeah. I've just been watching his documentary, so I should know, and I love him. She embarks on her own tour, Underprivileged, which she did at Edinburgh this year, and that starts at February at the Soho Theatre.
That's right, yeah.
Has twin boys and not a wife, but a life partner.
A life partner. That doesn't sound great either.
Yeah. But on her website it says wife, so that's why. And how?
Might as well be.
And somehow, through that, she's written a blooming book called The Other Mother. Have you guessed yet? No, it's not Camilla Parker Bowles. It's Jen Brister.
Oh, the disappointment that it's not Camilla Parker Bowles. No. I think I'd be up for that. I'd love to have a little chinwag with her, see what she's got to say. I'm pretty sure she'd be fun times with a glass of Prosecco.
I think Sherry, maybe I'm thinking.
No, you don't
Camilla?
Think so?
You don't think she'd be fun times, do you?
I think she'd be.
Yeah, no, she's
proper filthy. Fun times, yeah.
Filthy. Oh, that's the opinion. Anyway, welcome, ladies. Thank you for coming on the Funny Mummy Show. I feel like my intro was a bit blub blub today. But yeah, I am knackered. I mean, saying about, I did get an early night the other night, but then it all went awry when then the next night is poorly and he's up all night.
So, I don't even want to talk about those nights. They're so bleak.
They're so bleak. Let's not talk about it. Let's talk about something exciting. So, but you're touring, Jem, so surely now you've got kids, you must really appreciate the hotel rooms.
Yeah, you do. It's really weird. I do really appreciate a hotel room for like a night. But when you're doing like two or three nights in a row, they do suddenly become like less fun times. I don't know why. It's because you spend a lot of time on your own in a hotel room and you're having to find things to do. You know, when you just have to find stuff to do to fill your day.
Yeah.
Then you start to feel. I go feral very quickly. Mm. You think, I'll start writing a new book or I'll do my tax return. But you don't. You just sort of sit in your hotel room and just go, oh, no, I'll just watch something on Netflix for like 6 hours. And then, you know, you feel depressed.
But there's nothing wrong with that.
For a day, it's absolutely, it's an absolute joy. You're like, oh, my God, this feels like a luxury. But, you know, once you've been doing it like every week for about 6 weeks, you're like, God, I hate me. I hate me. This is really horrible.
And you miss.
I forgot to say that I miss my family. Yeah.
I forgot that was a couple of weeks.
That was the first thing I meant to say. And I miss my children. That's what, of course, I do. But I'm enjoying it. They're nice rooms to play. They're big rooms.
Are they?
Yeah, because he's successful.
He's a big deal.
So the rooms are great. You know, you're in rooms that are like 1,000 to 3,000 seaters. So they're fun to play.
I've been watching his, I think it's on Sky documentary, not Just Another Immigrant or something it's called. It's like a mockumentary. It's really funny with his family. When they go to
in the States?
Yeah.
When he moved to the States?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, is it really old?
No,
I'm just
No.
I think it's only, I think it's a couple of years old. Yeah. Yeah, he was out in LA for a while doing that, so yeah.
Because he's got three boys as well, so you must have some dressing room chats about boys.
Well, yeah, but he's not, I mean, he's away a lot, isn't he? So yeah. I'd need to have a chat with his wife.
Yeah.
Because she's the one that's got three boys all the time. You know, I mean, she's the hero. I mean, and he would say that as well.
Yeah.
Otherwise, he would get a slap.
He would get a slap, But he's a good dad. I remember I've only done one gig with him, and one of the first things he did was show me a picture of his kids, and I thought that was sweet.
Yeah, of course.
I lived with him in Edinburgh.
Oh, hello.
Yeah, in 2011. Yeah, and his wife was heavily, heavily pregnant. Like, she was due that September, I think. Yeah,
was that
the second.
Oh, the second, because she
not
was
the one where she actually had the.
Because then she was heavily pregnant in 2014,
yeah.
And then had the baby in Edinburgh.
Yeah.
What, by mistake?
I think they're timing that wrong. not by mistake. Well, I mean, yeah, I think the baby was due in September, but came early, and then they had the baby, and then they forgot they didn't register the baby. But you have to register the baby wherever it's born, so then they had to go back up to Scotland to register it. But anyway, that's been fun.
That's good. I obviously want to talk about your book. I came to your book launch. I don't know why I need to hold it. I feel like I need to hold it like I'm on This Morning.
I mean, no one can see it.
No one can see it because it's radio, but I just like to hold it. The other mother. I came to your book launch, which was lots of fun.
Yeah.
Why are you looking like that?
Well, a book launch is a bit like having a party, isn't it? Like, no one likes to host their own birthday party, do they?
You feel really embarrassed, but it's like, it was just.
Yeah, it's just weird, isn't it? You don't really get to enjoy it. But it was. I don't know what you're supposed to do at book launches if you're supposed to invite people to. I don't know what you're supposed to do.
Influential people.
Yeah, I don't know if you're supposed to do that, but I literally just invited my mates and family.
I felt a lot of love in the room. It was nice.
Yeah,
I
it was lovely.
Like, there wasn't any like, who's this? Who's this here? It was nice. But I was thinking on the way here, because we've known each other for quite a long time.
I'd say 14 years.
Yeah, something like
wow.
that.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, before the stand-up.
How so?
Well, really.
Probably 2005.
Because you wasn't doing stand-up when I met you, was you?
Yeah.
Wasn't. Oh, you was? I wasn't.
I was, yeah.
Okay. But because I was thinking, because I want to obviously ask questions about the book and stuff. But then I was like, actually, I don't even know. And I know this is like a really boring radio question, basic. But I don't even know how you got into the creative world. Do you mind me asking you that?
No, I don't mind.
Because I think sometimes the people listen to this, like, I don't ask that, do I, Gemma? And it's like, people are interested.
Well, yeah, of course, yeah. I mean, I'm interested.
This is what I know. you were doing stand-up and you were trying to get into presenting, but how did...
Well, I was doing presenting because of the agent I had at the time, and that was all he wanted me to do was presenting. And all I wanted to do was stand-up comedy, and so we were kind of at loggerheads, so I sort of did bits and bobs of presenting because that's what he wanted.
Did you start at school? Did you go to drama college?
No, I think I did a course at university. I did a theatre studies course, and within it there was a comedy module, and I did that, and that was when I first did my first ever gig when I was 21 downstairs at the King's Head in Crouch End.
Oh, it wasn't Middlesex. First gig?
Yeah, that was my first gig in 1996.
Wow.
It wasn't Middlesex University, was it?
It was Middlesex University.
Yes, because it's a very good comedy. Well, it's quite famous now, isn't it? Because of you and Alan Carr.
Certainly not because of me, but because of Alan Carr and Dan Skinner, who plays Angelos Epithemu. Oh. And there's a few people that have come out of there.
So do you think because of that module, had you not really thought about going into comedy before?
Not at all. Not even slightly. I mean, I thought about wanting to do performance, like acting, and comedy acting was the thing that I was the most interested in. But I hadn't thought about doing stand-up. And then when I did it, it was such a rush. And then, it's that classic thing where you do a gig in front of all your mates and everyone laughs. And then you do that same gig in front of strangers and they're like, you tank so badly. So then I proceeded to tank for about a year. And then I thought, and then I couldn't take it, and I stopped for about a year, and then I started up again in maybe end of 99, 2000, I started up again, yeah. And then, but I mean, like literally, I was dipping out. Then when I started doing a bit of presenting on Six Music, then I did a bit of sketch comedy, and then I didn't really get back on doing stand up and go right. I'm only going to do this. I'm not going to do anything else. I'm going to be completely focused. Yeah. Was 2008. So it's taken since 2008 to get to a point where I am no longer having to do the circuit.
Oh, beautiful.
So that to me is possibly the greatest achievement. I'm not saying that I never do circuit gigs, because of course I do.
For those that don't know what that means having to do a gig maybe down a little basement where there's just a lamp shining up from below.
Well, it's not just that. It's club gigs. It's doing club gigs. So it's being it's spending your weekend in Birmingham at the Glee or doing the Frog and Bucket or doing the Stand or it's travelling and you're away every weekend.
Which a lot of people love doing, but that's not for you.
It's not that it's not for me, but I've done it for 11 years. Mm. So when you get to a point where you don't have to do that anymore, then that feels like an achievement. And also because the circuit is exactly what it says it is. It's the same thing year in, year out. So, like, I remember, I think there was like 6 years in a row where I was doing Christmas gigs at the Glee. And, when you get to your sixth year and you're doing the same venues and the same sort of gigs in front of the same people, not the same people, but like some drunk,
office party.
Yeah. Then you just sort of go, this is not what I started doing stand-up for. So I wanted to do stand-up comedy because I wanted to be able to perform my own shows.
Right.
And then, you don't have to bend or compromise in the way that you sometimes have to do at a Christmas gig, because there's no point in trying to do a long form bit of stand up because they're like
with a narrative arc and some
clever callbacks, because they just want you to do knob gags.
Yeah.
So you get to a point as a comedian where you're like, wouldn't it be great if, and then you get that and then you're like, it still doesn't make you happy. But the point is that to me, and that's not to say that I won't have to go back on the circuit or I won't, that's not to say that that won't happen, because this is such a fickle business. But certainly at the moment, I'm in a position where I feel very, very fortunate that I am I do a lot less of those gigs. And if I do them, it's because I've chosen to do them rather than because I absolutely have to do them to pay my rent,
So... Oh, I feel very privileged that you're here now.
You should. I mean, I'm a very busy woman, Hattie.
So going back to the topic of your book, The Other Mother, how does a person, a woman that has all that going on, then decides, let's just have kids?
Well, I don't know. It's just something that I talked about, you know, with my partner. We've talked about it for such a long time, and she really, we both wanted children. And so I suppose that's...
Did you have that conversation quite early on? Because who is it? Someone telling me the other day that... a friend of mine that had been together 11 years and they've only just got married. And they're like, we're not sure. And one wants and one's not. And I was like, didn't you have this conversation before, guys?
Yeah. We didn't have the conversation straight away because I think when we first got together, neither of us were sure if it was, you know, neither of us knew what the hell we were doing. But certainly once we sort of established that we were going to be together, we had that conversation. And so, yeah. But obviously, we're a lesbian couple. We've got to be a bit more pragmatic about whether or not we're going to have kids. It's not like we were like, well, let's just keep trying and see what happens. Yeah. So we had to be a bit more... focused. We had to plan it, you know, we had to think about clinics and sperm donors and blah 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 in a way that you don't have to think about that if you're in a heterosexual relationship. So there was all of that to consider, and that, let me tell you, takes the romance out of it. By the time and also it takes such a long time that you get to a point where you go, well, it's probably not going to happen anyway.
Really?
It's probably not going to happen. So, and then you start to think about, well, we're quite happy. We didn't have kids and we're perfectly happy. So if we didn't have kids, it'd be all right, wouldn't it? Or you think maybe we could adopt, and you start to think about things a bit differently. And then when Chloe got pregnant, it was great. But my career in terms of it doing well didn't really happen until after the kids were born.
Wow, there you go.
So it didn't happen before. It wasn't like my career was like going along at a pace and then the kids arrived and it was like, oh, how am I going to juggle this? It was like... My career was going nowhere. And then Chloe had the kids and then things started to happen after that.
And you know, and I seem to hear that over and over and over again, that actually these careers that take off are, you know, I think there's an idea that, make sure you get your career before you start a family. Yes. These days, you know, that there's this chunk of time that you're supposed to spend building up your career.
Yeah.
And then you ruin it all with children. But actually, I hear so much more. That work seems to come flooding in after you become
coincidence, or do you parent? Think it's your personality and the whole? Oh, it's made me grow as a person having children, and so
yeah. Do you think? Yeah, that's a great question. Do you think it's coincidence?
No,
would
I don't.
It have happened anyway?
I don't know. I mean, I think something would have happened anyway, but I don't know. I can't say. I think having children gave me less time to a navel gaze. And be like, oh, what about my career and what about me and how do I fit into this, you know, to the universe? Mm. I was like, I haven't slept. I'm pretty sure I've got poo under my fingernails. Mm-hmm. I know I've got to drive to wherever, like Norwich today and back. And I know I'm going to get up 16 times in the night. Mm. So all of those things in your head, you're not thinking about your career. You're just thinking, I'm going to turn up, do the gig, go home. And I can't wait to go to sleep. Sometimes you're in conversations with people going, I wish you'd stop talking so I could sleep. You know, that's all you're thinking about is sleep. And so because you're taking all the pressure off you, particularly if you do something creative. So you're not analysing it and you're not strangling it and you just allow it. It just blossoms without you even. And there's something about being a performer.
So profound, Gemma.
It is.
It's something about being a performer where, like, if you are constantly going, right, if I don't flipping nail this gig, right, I mean, I can only say this as a stand-up comedian. Mm. If I don't nail this gig, then I'm rubbish. Mm. You know, I would turn up and go, I literally don't care if I die in my hole. Mm. I mean, like, I actually don't care because I've got bigger things to worry about. I've got two babies at home that need me. So I just need to get this, take the cash and bugger off. And that meant that I was totally free on stage.
Sounding
very... You don't study stoicism, do you?
No.
Have you heard of it?
No.
That's very... My husband's just got really into it. I'm not saying like it's like some kind of... Cole, it's not a religion or anything.
Pyramid scheme.
Is it? No, it's not.
What are you trying to sign us up to?
It's not bloody Avon or something.
Again. I'm in. I love Avon.
I just remember that being around at the same time.
I used to love the Avon lady.
Avon and then the pyramids.
She used to come around with a purple rinse and a load of makeup, just drink all her coffee and bugger off.
Oh, don't. Pippa D. Did your mum ever do Pippa D parties?
No, we don't.
That must have been a Kent thing. Maybe.
I got invited to a candle party a few years ago, and I was like, it has to stop. Right. I'm not leaving the house for a candle.
And the Tupperware parties?
Mm-hmm.
Well, as in, I was a child. My mum used to drag me to these things.
I think the Tupperware parties were really not about the Tupperware. It was about a load of women getting together and getting drunk and then exchanging plastic case. Tupperware parties were never about Tupperware. They were like about gossip and drink, which I think is brilliant.
Parties came along. My sister made me dress up in some of the stuff to be the model.
Wrong, I've just remembered that,
and I was about 10.
10-year-old French maid.
Yeah.
Now, Hattie, have you just put on these crotchless pants? I feel a bit weird.
Oh, God. But you don't want to ask them now. That would be a good icebreaker with me and my mum friends.
Get your two boys in some frilly knickers and some fluffy handcuffs.
On.
Yeah.
Strap on.
You went there much quicker than I did.
I know, sorry.
I was like, I can't go that far. You did it.
Oh, gosh, I don't even know what we were talking about, but it's all
stoicism.
Stoicism, look it up. I know, I won't go into it now, but it's basically what you were saying, which is, it took me a while to get my head around it because it's like that kind of like not caring, but that doesn't mean you just go, I don't care, but it's kind of
let it go.
Yeah. But
I think you can't do that unless you are. I mean, the only way I could do that was because I physically didn't have the strength to care. I don't know if I could do that without that. Do you know what I mean? I had something in place that forced me not to care. I don't think I was able to. I wouldn't have been able to do that without the debilitating sleep deprivation that I was in for 3 years.
Yeah.
Hellish, nightmarish deprivation.
I hate the saying sleeping through, but they're good sleepers now then.
They do. Although one of them at the moment is I don't know why. Maybe it's something to do with starting school. He's waking up in the night and just weeing in the carpet in the middle of the bedroom.
Okay.
This.
I shouldn't laugh because I can imagine. The
last night we just came in and he was just having a wee in the middle of the bedroom.
Was he awake?
He was in tears, just crying and weeing. And then I picked him up mid flow because it was dark. I didn't know what was happening. I was like, okay, here we go.
But yeah, they do. So that's why school gates, the mums are saying, it's because you find these a bit more emotional. It's because of starting school and all this. So
yeah, there's a bit of that. But no, they are sleeping, which is like the best thing. I can't think of anything better.
I'll get into my bed every single night.
Oh.
Yeah. But I don't, as long as he starts in his bed, that's fine. That's what I say to him.
And you don't disturb too much then, that's all right.
No,
it's all right.
I can't sleep when they come into my
bed.
No,
I can't.
Because they do, they're all knees and elbows.
Yeah. Is he quite a still sleeper then?
No, he's not. I have to sort of get out of the bed and walk around a lot of the time.
He's
squidged up.
Yeah, it doesn't matter how much of the bed they've got.
No.
You are always at the end. And also, it's like having like a sock in a washing machine. It's like just constantly spinning around in the bed. You're like, for crying out loud.
Yeah, it's true. I don't wake up like the other end of the bed, kind of my head hanging.
Which he does.
What's all that about?
Oh, Jen.
Last night, the little one got into bed with us and his leg, he was like doing this thing where he was like turning and turning and turning. And at one point his leg would go up and go down and in my back, and I'm like half asleep going, that's not going to end well for me. And it would just go up and it'd go down. And then literally at one point in the night, it just went up and smacked straight down on my back, right onto my kidneys. And I was like, oh my God, this is like, get out of my bed.
I always think of you, Jen. There's a couple of parenting things that you'll be glad to know. I think of you in bed when you say, every time I end up in the middle and that horrible bit between, no pillows.
Oh.
And you always say that you just get out and go into another bed.
Yeah, I'll just go into any other bed that happens. Yeah. There's a point where there's four of us in the bed and I'm like, I'm out. I'll sleep on the carpet, I'll sleep on the floor, I'll sleep anywhere, but I can't sleep.
I need someone to not be touching me or kicking me in the face.
And also there's two of them. Mm. And they do this thing where with Chloe, they'll put their head by Chloe because they want their head near her, but their feet are always near me. Oh. So I get the like kick in and the, that's not good times.
There's lots of questions I want to ask about the book, but I also kind of like, don't want to give away too much. You know what I mean?
Oh, literally, you won't be giving away anything.
Shall we go for a little one? Your song choice.
My song choice.
Yeah.
Is Okay, so this song I heard on Six Music, and when I heard it, I was like, I love it. I love this song. But they didn't back announce it, so I didn't know what it was. So I actually had to go on the internet to find, that's how much I liked it, to find out who it is. And then I've been playing it on a loop, and now I think I'm probably going to buy the album. But this is Sampa the Great and Freedom. Just so
you're listening to the Funny Mummies on Soho Radio for the Other Woman Show. And I'm Hattie Hatton. We've got Jem Brister and Gemma Beagley.
Hi.
Hello.
Hi.
We're still here.
Still here.
In the studio.
Now, Jem Brister is the author of The Other Mother. Not the perfect mother, not the tiger mother, not the natural mother, the other mother. And me and Gemma really want to know, because we'd like to write a book. No, that's not why we're asking. Oh, maybe, are you? Yeah, I think Gemma secretly has a book in her that she's sitting on. No, I'm joking. Don't make
so
jokes.
So she can lay.
Yeah.
Yeah, like an egg.
How did it
Where
come
is
about?
This going?
How did it come about? Did because can I just say a suspicion? Because you did really good, the blogs, didn't you? The Other Mother blogs.
Yeah.
And I remember I was going to ask you if you wanted to write them for Scream, because I was going to start doing blogs on the Scream of Laughter page. Getting mum, getting stand-ups. And I was going to ask you, I mean, I don't know why you turned down my offer. And then I was like, oh, she's not, what's going on? And I had a little inkling that something might be brewing.
Well, I was writing these for Standard Issue, which is no longer, was Sarah Millican's website.
It's a podcast now, isn't it?
It is a podcast. It's still going. And the girls, those lovely ladies are still doing that, which is brilliant. The site is gone, but that's where I started to write those for. And off the back of that, I don't know. It was actually quite a few mates were like, have you thought about writing a book? And I was like, nobody wants me to write a book. And they were like, well, nobody wants anyone to write a book. So just, I mean, no one actually wants anyone to do anything. But if you want to do it, do it. So I tried to write a book proposal. And genuinely, the book proposal took me longer to write than the book. It just took forever. So the book proposal took me about a year and a half to write. And then I came on your show.
Previous radio station.
And do you remember I was on with Viv Groscott?
Yes.
And Viv was like, and I said, oh, I've got, I would like to write a book or something. I think I said something like quite a throwaway thing. And Viv was like, you should write it. You should definitely write a book.
She inspired this podcast as well. Because she, you know, I used to just do, which is great. I just be the other woman with Hattie Ashton. But she was the one who said, make it connected to my club. You know, make it about mums and babies and families and stuff.
Well, it was Viv that was like, send it to me. She said, have you got a book proposal? I said, yeah, I've written something. She went, well, send it to me. And then I sent it to her. And then she went, right. And she gave me some notes and then sent it back. And then was like, do you want me to send it to my agent? And I was like, you know, when you just think, sure, yeah.
Sodic.
I mean. But then in the back of your head, you're like, I mean, don't bother, love, but if you want to. So then she sent it to her agent, who then got in contact with me and went, do you want to have a meeting? I'd like to have a chat with you about that. Signed with that agent. She sent it off to a few publishers and I got a book deal. And nothing in my career has ever happened as quickly. Everything else has been the hardest of slogs. But from the moment going to do your show with Viv to getting a book deal, I think was probably, let me see, November, December, January, February. It was about 5 months.
I feel really responsible for
I think you should get a kickback.
You flipping out, did I not get some money out of this?
You're in the acknowledgements.
Am I?
Are you not read the acknowledgements?
Hattie, no. Rule one, when your friend writes a book, you look at the acknowledgements to find your name.
Oh, for heaven's sake, you silly sod. You're in the acknowledgements. They're at the back of the book, not the front.
Oh, yeah, of course. I have read a book before.
Right, well, never mind. Book. Don't worry about it. I mean, look at it later.
Come on, dead air, Hattie.
I'm looking now because I'm such a big head.
It's just know that it's there.
Okay, I know
that's
it's
my
there.
Biog. Right, okay, fine.
Thank
so
you.
That's why, but,
I'm joking. I'm just so pleased. That warms my cockles that it all,
the reason why I started writing those blogs was because I wanted to write something that represented my experience as a parent. So the fact that I'm not the biological mum, the fact that I'm in a lesbian relationship. So, and there's loads of other people that are in my position who might, you know, be adopting kids or step parents or whatever. Or
did you know any other gay couples that done the same as you, went down the fertility route?
Yes.
Facility clinic group.
Yeah. Did we? We knew of people. I don't think we had any friends. We've now got lots of friends who have got children who have had them since we had ours.
Have you inspired people?
I think they were going to do it anyway, to be fair. But we were we did it maybe like a year or two before them. And I wanted to write something that was funny and not non-prescriptive and also was really honest and went, look, this is a bit of a... Can I swear?
Yeah.
This is a bit of a shit show. You know, this is not perfect by any stretch of the imagination. And if you feel like you're not doing it right, no one is.
Yeah.
None of us are. And I just want... The book for me is a companion for anyone, really. I think you can read it even if you don't have kids. But
yeah,
if you've got kids and you want to read about someone else who's doing it, doing a terrible job. And then...
No.
Yeah, and something to make you laugh. That's what I wanted to write.
I wish that I had had something like this when I was a mum. A new mum. Yeah. 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 Because it's so incredibly funny, but also it is just honest.
Mm.
And it is just, you know, it's the thing about, you know, it is shit right now, you know. I've just found it wonderful. I really wish I'd had it.
Oh, thanks, Gemma.
Yeah.
I think a lot of the time when you read books, and obviously this is not a parenting manual, it's just a memoir, isn't it? It's just about my experience. So I wrote something where I was like, I'm just going to tell you everything, and I'm not going to pretend at any point that I've got this right. You know, do you know? So that there's so many of these books that they're given to mums, they just make you feel terrible about yourself. Mm. You're reading it going, well, I'm not doing that and I can't do that. A lot of the language is like, you should be, your son should be, or your baby should be doing this by this time. You're like, well, that's just completely arbitrary. What my kids, they've done it whenever they've wanted to do it. They've never gone, oh, it's at the 6-month mark, so I've decided I'm going to start sleeping. They've just done whatever they're going to do.
And you even talk about in the hospital where you had one midwife saying, you know, feed them all the time, just feed them every hour they must be feeding. And then the other one saying, just leave them and they'll tell you when they need feeding. You know, so that conflicting advice from the same institution, even.
Midwives, you know? But yeah, you do get, I hear so many people talk about that.
And then you hear other mums telling you stuff. So then they've heard something from, it's Chinese whispers. You know, they're like, oh, you know, if you put your baby when he's not asleep, but nearly asleep. And then, you know, if you open a window.
Cover them, don't cover them.
Put a vacuum cleaner by the head. You're like, listen, mate. I don't know what you're talking about. I don't even know what's going on. My all I know is that they're not sleeping, and it doesn't matter what I do, they don't sleep. So they just, and then they just, guess what? They started sleeping when they were ready to start sleeping. Mm. And I genuinely don't think we could have done anything differently, because we tried everything. You know, all of the things that people say to try, we tried and it didn't work. And I think there's, you know, then you're made to feel like, oh, are we a failure because our children aren't sleeping? Or are we a failure because they don't like avocado? It's like, for heaven's sake, you know, they're just, sometimes you forget that they've been on the planet for like 8 or 9 months. They're blobs. They've got no cognition and they're not trying to, destroy you. They're just babies.
And then, they're not being...
They're empathy vacuums.
People think they're like this manipulative little thing or something. It's like,
you've got to teach them a lesson. It's like,
it's one piece of advice I had, which was really good, which was they don't even, well, when they're first born and for, you know, a good while, really, they don't even know they've got arms and legs. I mean,
they don't even know that they're separate to you.
No.
Mm.
They're like, they think you are the same person that you.
Yeah.
So how we expect them to be like.
That goes on for like, I feel like Buster's only, he's 15 months and he's only just realizing we're not connected. Or I think he still thinks we are, but yeah.
Well, I mean, there'll always be a bit of that because you're his mum. But you know that the idea when you get these books where they go, babies need to be taught a lesson, or babies should have this. It's like,
what are these books? I don't read any of those.
Well,
books.
Like, you know, we talked about control crying,
and all that sort of stuff. And you know, like, if your baby doesn't eat, don't make something else. Give it, you know. All right, I'll starve my 8-month-old baby because it needs to be taught a lesson.
You'll have that for dinner.
Yeah, or you'll have that for dinner, or it's nothing. It's like flipping egg, mate.
It sounds like my parents.
Angela's ashes. Just this sort of.
We did follow. Did you follow any? I did follow one sort of parenting program, as it were, book. But that was, again, someone else said, if you want to follow one, just pick one and stick to that. Don't listen to anybody else. Like, there's loads of books, but if you need, I felt I needed that kind of reference
direction.
Point,
yeah, sure.
Obviously, we were obviously clever enough, to sort of be a bit like, it was quite routine-y we were trying to do. so, but we wouldn't really stick to it, as in tomorrow's another day, so it wouldn't. Do you see what I mean?
Like, yeah, yeah.
Kill ourselves.
I think you can cherry pick what you want, yes, from all of these things and go, oh, I think that sounds like a great idea. Oh, that works for my kid. I'll do that. But I don't think there's a one size fits all. So I don't think you're going to buy a book and go, everything in this book is going to work for my son or daughter, because it's not. And you kind of have to be a little bit more pragmatic. You have to be a little bit more like, you know, that. And I know it works for some people, but there is a dogma that I've seen where people are like, she will nap at 2. Even if she's not tired, I'm going to put her down at 2 because she will nap at 2. Mm. And we were just a little bit more flexible. And that's what worked for us. But if that works for you, do that. But that just did not work for us. Because also, we are both self-employed. We both have insane schedules. And we couldn't always match them up every day. So the kids kind of had to be...
Fit in.
They kind of had to fit in with us as well.
Had to be flexible as well.
Yeah. Probably that didn't help, actually, even now with hindsight. We kind of probably made a rod for our own back at some point there. But anyway.
Well, I think that sort of perfectly takes us on to, I was saying to Gemma, one of the things I'd like to talk about, which I talked, I think I mentioned not very well, but not very articulately in my pre-monologue, as it were. And it fits very well because I didn't realise you did this TED talk on changing the way we bring up our boys. It's very good, by the way.
Oh, thank you.
I stopped watching halfway through, though, because I was like, I'm going to end up asking maybe some of the same things that you cover. And I didn't want it to influence me too much.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But it's just what you were talking about in there. It is similar to what I want to ask you about. Okay, so first of all, I say, have you noticed in your upbringing, so you were brought up, you had all brothers, that's right?
Three brothers, yeah, three brothers. Yeah.
And where was you? Are you in the middle?
Number two. In the middle.
And have you noticed a difference between the way you was treated growing up to how your boys are treated?
Yeah.
I know it's an obvious question, but I'm just...
So how my brothers were treated.
Right.
Yeah, I think there's a way that women mother sons is just different to the way we mother our daughters. And I think that is partly because we expect less from our sons, I think, and we expect more from our daughters. And partly because I think girls and women, we mature differently. I think there is a lot more going on. And I know this is probably a stereotype, but I think... from what I've seen from my friends with daughters, it's a lot more complex. There's a lot more going on. They're thinking a lot more. Girls develop differently. They can, not always, but sometimes it can be harder to know why they're upset or why they're crying. You know, when my sons are crying, they're tired, they're hungry, they've fallen over. That's it. They're tired, they're hungry, they've fallen over, you know, or that, you know, they've hurt themselves. That's it. But my friends who've got daughters is like, I don't know why she's crying. She doesn't know why she's crying. She's upset about something that's, you know, it's a bit like, you know, when the kids, I think, so it can be harder to get your head around what's going on. And so it can be easier to go, do you know what? She's a fucking nightmare. But my son... he's just easier.
Right.
And so I connect easier with him. And also because he just loves me and it's a very simple love. Whereas my daughter keeps questioning me or she's challenging me or she just seems a bit more challenging.
Right. So then you hear that, don't you go, I don't like, yeah. Oh, I've had boys all day long. Girls, so manipulative.
Mm. That's why I always... Do you know what I got when I was expecting? Was when I said, oh, I'm having a boy.
And you knew he was having a boy.
And it was, oh, well, at least he won't come home pregnant.
Did
more
you?
More than twice.
No.
At least he won't come home pregnant.
He might.
What? Oh my God. Yeah, exactly.
Well, yeah. But you know what? He might get a girl
Congratulations.
Pregnant.
Congratulations.
Yeah, I know, exactly.
He might be the reason she is pregnant, exactly. Which is just as bad.
Oh, just, yeah.
I think that, I mean, I talk about this in my last show, but genuinely, I remember this woman just losing her mind when she found out that Chloe was pregnant with twins and she just completely lost it. It was like, oh my God, that's amazing. You're going to be so lucky having boys. They're amazing because girls are such a nightmare. And it made me so angry. It just made me angry. I was like, what is your problem with your daughter? And if your daughter, you know, like you're going to give her a complex if you keep telling her that she's a nightmare and her son and your son is a joy. I think that there are things that we do where mums can be, and I don't know how I would be if I had a daughter. I might well be the same, where we're a little bit harder with our daughters than we are with our sons. And we give our, you know, like I know the way I'm with my boys is disgusting. I'm like, oh my God, they're so special. And I just want, I mean, maybe I'd be like that with my daughters as well. I hope I would.
Yeah.
But there is a certain kind of like where we do everything for them. Whereas with girls, we're like, well, she can kind of get on and do that herself. Yeah. You know, when I was growing up, my mom's like, you can do that yourself. You don't need me to do that. But your brothers, they're always going to need a bit of extra help because the boys and boys are stupid and girls are clever. And that's how it works in our house. And it was like, well, mum, what you're doing is constantly saying that they can't do it. So they don't do it. Whereas if you made them do it, they just have to bloody well
so
do it.
True.
You know, like, I can't expect your brothers to do this. You do the shopping or can you make sure the washing's done? Because if I ask them to do it, they won't do it. And I'm like, well, if you keep asking them to do it, they will do it. But if you're... So it was always the fact that I would have to do things that they wouldn't have to do because they were boys. And I'm not saying that, I mean, I'm hoping that people are parenting their children differently now, but I think the way that we parent our sons and daughters is different.
Yeah.
And not just that, but we're expecting women to be responsible for consent. We're expecting girls to be responsible for telling boys what they can and can't do with their bodies. And where we as mums, as women, if we have sons, it's our responsibility to tell our sons about consent and explain to them. And also explain consent about, you know, I think it's important that my children understand it's not a question that I need to have with the conversation I need to have with them right now, but what I want them to understand about consent is about consent for themselves as well. So I want them to know that their body is sacred, is special, that no one is allowed to touch it, that no one is allowed
Which is something I bet people just don't say to their sons.
Well, I mean,
or haven't done.
We're already having that conversation.
How are you going to... What age are you thinking?
We're having that conversation now because one of them is just constantly getting his wink out.
I was going to say. Sorry.
They're like constantly getting his wink out or showing his bump. So all I said to him is like, your body is very special and mummy and mama love you very much, but your body is so special that you only show your body to mummy and mama. You don't show it to anyone else because that's how special it is.
Yeah.
And if someone ever says to you that they want to see your body, then you tell mummy and mama. You tell them straight away. You say no and you tell mummy and mama. And they're like, they don't really understand. Mm. But all I'm trying to do is get that stuff out there in much the same way as I say to my son, he's constantly trying to push his penis onto people. I tell him, no, because people don't like it, and you're not allowed to do that. You have to, if you ever get your wink out, that again is only for at home. You can't just get it out of school and start waving your wink about. You know, these are difficult conversations to have with a 5-year-old because the more I say to him, "Don't get your wink out," the more he gets it out.
Sure.
But it's a dialogue, it's a conversation, and I'm not expecting them to understand about consent yet, but I want them to understand that this is a conversation that they can have, that we are going to keep having.
Yeah, yeah.
And as their cognition gets better and as they understand things a bit better, it will make more sense to them because this is a conversation we've been having always, as opposed to out of the blue, we go, now listen, it's about your naked body.
Yeah.
You know, and also I don't want them to, but the same token, I don't want them to feel any shame or embarrassment about being naked.
No, that's what I find hard. Yeah. Like I go, oh, that's the, you know, because he does have a little play.
I'm like, that's at home. That's at home. We can do that. But we never do that outside of the house.
I'm trying to sort of say to him, that's private. But then I'm like, is that wrong to say that? I go, that's just...
Look, they start playing with it now and they don't stop playing with it till they die. Okay,
yeah,
so they're going to keep playing with it. And they will at some point realise it's wrong because they might get it out of school and someone embarrasses them and then that's when they know to keep it in their pants.
Oh, gosh.
That's how I feel about the nose picking as well. That's how it's going to stop.
Oh, God, nose picking and eating it.
Mm.
Oh,
but they
really
rummage, don't they?
Oh, yeah.
It's like you're going to take out part of your brain, mate.
We've got to finish soon and we just need a part two, really, of this subject, obviously, because I think the... I'm really going to take that on, Jen. They're all appreciating their body. It's a good tip. But as I said, you said on your TED Talk, the bar, and then I said it just before you said it, the bar is set low for men. And going back, because I asked my husband about this last night with like, you know, being, women are brought up to be the caretaker of the family. So my point is, as I was saying at the beginning, is that I just really want to bring them up to think about all these things and not just, it feels like leave it to the women to think about sending a card, think about arranging a birthday, just seeing if they're okay.
It's weird because I did a different podcast where this was discussed, was talking about the cognitive load. which is exactly all the things that you're talking about, yeah. which men never consider in a relationship, like the things where you go, right, I need to buy my son's school uniform, or I need to think about sending a birthday card, or I need to think about sending thank you cards for people that came and gave my children presents, or I need to think about buying the Christmas present. You're thinking about things that your partner isn't never having to think about, because you always do it, because you just, and even if you went out to work and you had a full-time job, you would still be responsible for that.
Yep,
and that is the cognitive load, which is the load which all caretakers, usually women, are expected to do. And no one thanks them. No one acknowledges them. No one even admits that it's happened. It just happens without anyone saying anything. And because it happens without anyone saying anything, it's invisible.
And is that, you two must be the perfect blooming...
No, Chloe then? Does that, and I'm the person that completely... I mean, I acknowledge it. I mean, I see that she does it, and I am appreciative of it.
And even just but check it. I know it sounds awful. Now I'm doing it again. I'm doing it again. I was going to say even just checking up, but like if Alex goes, oh, did you order the uniform, or whatever, you just feel like that's good. Do you know what I mean? You're not just completely alone with it all. Do you see what I mean?
Yeah. When you're alone with it all, then that's depressing.
Oh, so much more. We've got a. Play your song, Gem. I did your song last time, but it's a bloody good one, so I don't want to miss it out. Before we go, thank you so much for coming on the show today. So much more. We need to do a part two, Jen. Would that be all right?
Yeah, let's do a part two.
Thank you, Jen.
Listen, I'm happy to always plug that book, because I worry that no one's going to buy it.
They will.
So please buy it.
And so, there's so much more I want to say, but I was like, no, just... Honestly, I'm such a slow reader. I haven't finished reading it, but I read like Lily Hart just on leaving the book launch. She's going to look where my bookmarker is now.
Going to look and see. I'm going to show you exactly where your acknowledgements are, you absolute
Gemma,
spoon.
Intro your song.
Oh, well, I mean, I famously hate jazz music.
Do you?
No,
I didn't
not
know
famously.
That.
I don't like jazz music, but this song came out of nowhere, didn't it? In... I don't know, 88 or
is
something.
It?
Yeah, and it was just a great track. She's got a wonderful vocal. Love it.
It reminds me.
And then,
of
and then a supermarket came along and used it for an advert and killed it for a while.
Yeah, but. I thought it was This is connected to the finding the right house. You want to find something that's
nothing to do with that.
Okay, great. Thanks,
Stop
ladies.
Stop making assumptions.
Please rate, listen. You are listening, obviously. Rate, listen, subscribe,
listen,
and just keep listening. And love yourselves and buy yourselves a jumpsuit like I did. That really cheered me up today.
Mine okay. The camel toe though.
But mine the camel toe. Bye, thanks. This is Fairground Attraction.
Half-hearted love affairs. I need someone who really cares. Life is too short to play silly games. I've promised myself I won't do that again. It's got to be perfect. It's got to be worth it. Yeah. Too many people take second best. Well, I won't take anything less. It's got to be.
You've been listening to the Funny Mummies podcast with me, Hattie Ashdown, in association with Screaming With Laughter for the Other Woman radio show on Soho Radio. Thanks to all my guests and panel today, and edited and produced by Charlotte Kingston. We'll be back every month for another dose of Mum and Tonic.
Happy Mother's Day!